All right, friends. Welcome to Ask Robin Black. It is, Chase, episode 6. Episode 6, which is pretty freaky. We were humming along pretty good, getting together on Sundays. And then we did the odd one in the middle of the week, even. And then I went away. I was in Vegas. I was in Los Angeles, traveling around. Instead of doing Ask Robin Black, I hung out with Brennan Schaub and did a bunch of stuff. But we're back. Sundays. What were we trying to do in the beginning? Chase and I literally were like, well, Sundays we don't have anyone to talk to about fights. They happened on Saturday night. And somehow the press conference comes out and then people share that. A bunch of things were said and then we leave it at that. And that feels weird because I always want to talk about great things the day after great things happen. So that's why we started this. And then you knew that if you were going to do anything of value, it couldn't just be you ask me questions, I give you answers. That's something, but we had to figure out something else. And on some level, we figured out that in the back of the machine, when you look at things and you find answers, the finding and the working them out is actually interesting. It's fun. That's what I love to do. My job of talking about fights happens often at a desk, and we have 6 minutes and talk about something. And you're talking about something, and all the thinking and studying has been done. And I thought we could do it together. So thanks for hanging out. And the people who have been sending me questions, thank you. And people have been cool to me with this show. It's been really appreciated, and I really do. Last night, Holly Holm versus Jermaine Durandamy. We had Anderson Silva, a bunch of stuff. So we'll get into some of that today. There was some great fights, and there was some beautiful stuff happened. Jim Miller and Dustin Poirier, really, like, I don't have any questions about that, I don't think. I glanced over these. Chase just kind of lines them up and sends them. I try not to think about them too much, if I can help it. But that fight was pretty spectacular. There are things that happen in the fights, in the game, in the moments of conflict in a cage. How somebody throws a punch. Excuse me. I've got a thing, so hopefully that's all right. You guys are hang with me. How somebody throws a punch or a kick or, you know, how they get out of a choke is all amazing stuff. It's fascinating. It's complex and it's compelling. But sometimes the human element is what really makes us drawn to these fights. And when you can see that a guy can't walk seconds after he's just fought at the highest level against a trained professional killer, that you right away get that. You can feel what's going on there, that something bigger than punches and kicks happened. And Jim Miller, every single time, like, I'll watch that guy fight as long as he'll fight. And I'll thank him for those fights as long as he does that thing. Because you see underneath everything that Jim Miller does, you have this sense of hard work, right? Like, we appreciate effort when we watch things, whatever it is we're watching. Some people want to watch America's Got Talent or whatever. Some people want to watch fighting. Some people want to watch football. In movies and television shows that we watch, effort, like just that drive that you can't be beaten, you can't be stopped, you can't be dissuaded from going for that thing, we get inspiration in it. And every time that Jim Miller fights, I feel that, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Jim Miller, for that. But let's get into some questions. We've been working out what might make this worthwhile. I bring up some things I can maybe draw some stuff on, because the thinking is, let's work these answers out. My job and my calling and what I do and my purpose is to search for answers in the world of fighting and then share those and see my underlying thing that matters to me is how can, and it's how I have shaped my life, is how can we draw things that make sense, lessons, valuable lessons from what we learn about the martial arts and apply them to our life to make our life better. That's an underlying thing that I, how I live. And so that's what we're trying to do. So let's get to some questions today. Okay. At Dime Collectors, quotes, all warfare is based on deception, Sun Tzu. The Art of War, right here. How is this applied to MMA? Okay. All warfare is based on deception. This is a great question. This is the kind of shit that that I'm just so thrilled that we get to share. A lot of the discussion that we have about fighting is about mechanisms and about, you know, all kinds of stuff. I don't want to get into that. I talk about that way too much. But sometimes it's about these fascinating things. All warfare is based on deception. So he goes on to say, question, feints and fakes, question mark. Please elaborate. So the art of war, of course, this version is point form, which is interesting. There are many versions of this book out. Get it, and you should read it, and it's very fascinating. Because war is something that humans do and something that we are, and at whatever stage, whether we were different tribes, and we still are different tribes, we have conflict. And we always have. And ideas have conflict, and goals have conflict. And, you know, if we want to Chase and I and you want to accomplish a certain thing, that can be at conflict with what someone else wants to accomplish. And so what you want to accomplish at work or with your family or whatever, there are other forces that don't want the exact same thing. So you have these conflicts and these wars. And we see them play out when Jim Miller fights Dustin Poirier. Their goals do not work together. They both want a win bonus. They want the glory and the feeling of victory. They can't both have that. So we have a war. We have a conflict. All warfare is based on deception. So if we get into fighting, when we first fight, you and I come towards each other. We don't know anything, whether anger or emotion has caused this, or early on in our evolution, we are fighting over the same woman, and one of us hits the other. There's not a lot of deception at first. We hit somebody and somebody falls down, or we hit each other and then something happens, or someone is dissuaded from fighting and that's the end of that. But as soon as you go on to any level of now that we find that that is random, we want to find a way to make that less random. We want to find a way to increase our likelihood of winning this war or this conflict. And the first thing that you find out, so what's that guy? Mickey Gall is fighting CM Punk. His feints and fakes have to be different because what happens in the mind of the enemy is how all of this deception works. So if Mickey Gall comes out and plays a small feint, the type of feint that you need to work against Chris Weidman, CM Punk's not as evolved at warfare, at conflict, at fighting. So his brain won't actually register it, which is why if you look back, Mickey Gall comes out like this. He literally has to sell him this. He has to make his mind engage that this is happening, and then he takes him down. And at the most basic level, we can all understand that. If you think this is happening and you either deal with it or you're coming to see me, your engagement in that allows me to take you down. That's the basic principle of overhand right versus double leg takedown. Or fake the takedown, the guy's hands drop and you punch him. So we can all really see that when it's binary like that. It's simple. You're dealing with this, and I give you this. You bite on that, and I give you that. And the simpler, the better when the mind is basic, because the mind has to first be capable of reading what the threat is. And a small feint wouldn't have – CM Punk's not experienced enough to respond to that, which is why he gave him the big fake. Like literally, if you go back and watch, and it was smart. That's where somewhere in there I was like either he and the people he worked with really understood the situation there. A small feint isn't going to do it. So now we – and it is thousands of those things when we talk about, and I mean, no disrespect to the human being, CM Punk or any other person, but you can't become a fighter. There are these subtleties and these sensitivities that develop only with time and only with work. So let's say now that they do, and now we're dealing with somebody who is a purple belt in jiu-jitsu and he has 5 amateur fights. He knows that's fake. So his mind, the deception, wears off on him. Now you have to be more complicated in your deception. It has to feel real. It has to be something subtle enough that works. So it's strange the way that that changes. But where I'm going with this is it becomes mega layered. And that's where it's fascinating, is what the deceiver starts to do, and this is done in every fight that you're watching of a high level, is try to penalize the other man's intelligence or skills. So what you're doing when you're fighting with me at a high level is your brain, not very consciously, but sometimes the conscious mind enters into it, starts to read patterns in what I'm doing. Every time I slip out this way, this thing happens. And you start to see these patterns. And what you are doing as you see my patterns is you are starting to walk me into something. So what my deception begins is I know that. And so I'm trying to penalize you for that. I'm trying to now – you are deceiving – you're reading me, and I'm trying to tell you lies, that you think that I'm doing this, and as a result, the kick with your left leg is going – you know, the left head kick or the switch kick from an orthodox stance is going to come. It's going to come because I have a mistake, a pattern that is happening. As that pattern happens, you throw the left head kick. I was lying the whole time. I did not have a flaw or an opening. What I was trying to do was draw out your left head kick. In drawing out your left head kick, I'm going to now strike you with the thing that I was planning to do that required your left head kick. At an Alistair Overeem level, you know that. So I am doing a thing that is going to draw out your in the midst of all this chaos, blood in your eye, everything's happening, you're still doing it. I am doing this thing to draw out your left head kick because I want to throw a right hand. Or a left hook off of your left head kick. So I'm doing a thing to draw out your left head kick. I think you will throw a left head kick because I have shown you this error to draw your left head kick. And I'm going to throw a left hook off of your left head kick. Alistair Overeem will understand all of that. And he wants my left hook. He wants my left hook to come because he has an answer to that. And on some level, all of this series of lies and deceptions is happening when Holly Holm is fighting Jermaine Durandamy. And to varying degrees, Alistair Overeem does it on a higher level than Junior Dos Santos does. Perhaps, maybe not. It could be the other way. I'm not making a judgment of the two men. I believe Holly Holm does that on a higher level, but it may not matter if I don't bite or I don't read or I start to ignore. And I've looked back a lot of times at what's that kid's name who beat Dominic? Cody Garbrandt. And that sounds ridiculous considering what I do, but I have a thing with names, and I do suspect it's from getting hit in the head. I'm not 100% sure. You'll never know. But I have a name thing. And so when I work at the desk, Ramdeen, who's my longtime partner, and Pollock helps a lot too. We're close friends. We've all worked together for a long time now. But Ramdeen and I finish each other's sentences as commentators. And I'll be like, you know, and he'll finish it for me. He'll give me the name. I remembered Cody's name before Chase gave it to me, but because Chase was right there. because he drank a lot of beer last night. Did you? He did. So where were we going? Oh, yeah. So Cody Garbrandt's gig was he was capable of not responding to all of Dominic's deception. Dominic's the best deceiver in the game, and he may fold that in on itself for the next time that he fights Cody Garbrandt, and I trust that he can and might. But Cody's big thing was that you can't ignore it all, because if you ignore these things, some of them are real, and you need to respond because the next one comes. But desensitizing himself to many, some, or having broad strokes answers to it. So if somebody is giving you subtle feints, micro and macro is something we got into before, and I got into with my Holly Holm breakdown. He's giving you these micro things, and you have a macro answer. It's just like, well, I'm not going to come towards you. Anyways, this is a very multi-layered thing, and I could spend the whole hour talking on it. And it really, the more you look into it, the more fucking incredible it is. Because what you're seeing is a guy kicking a guy and a guy moving and somebody who can't breathe and he's tired and a guy trying to choke him and he's getting up and all of this stuff. But in underneath that, you are running algorithms, sorting algorithms. We'll get more into this another time. If anyone has any specific algorithm questions, I'll bring in a book. By the next time we read, I'll restudy this book called Algorithms for Life. But algorithms are basically, if I send this package to Chase in Chicago and I send it through FedEx, How does that work? How does this get to Chase? There's a lot of algorithms that have to take place. It goes into a – it all goes into an office, and somehow this thing gets to Chase on the correct bus or on the correct truck to the correct plane to the correct thing to the correct truck to Chase's – to the correct place to Chase's house. And when there's thousands of them, it's types of sorting algorithms, mathematical equations and plans that are sorted in such a way that this gets to Chase's house. And we'll get into that more another time. But and if you have any thoughts or questions or ideas for me – hit me with hashtag Ask Robin Black, and we'll get into that next time. But your brain is basically now trying to sort things, and you're trying to overload the guy's sorting algorithms. And there's other algorithms running, but sorting out bubble sort is a type of sorting algorithm. We'll break that down next time we get together. But your brain is running these algorithms, trying to keep up, trying to add new information. What does this mean? Nothing? Great. It means nothing. Oh, fuck, I got punched in the face now. Oh, it means something. Did I overreact to it? On a level, when you're trying to figure out, we all understand, I'm meandering all over the place, but these nonlinear thinking is how we try to work out some of these things. We all understand when you see a baseball come and the guy hits it, that his brain is operating different than ours. But now we're doing it and we're learning and we're studying and we're making judgments and we're categorizing things that we're reading off of this guy over 15 minutes or 25 minutes or 30 seconds or whatever, and your brain is needing to do that. And that fascinating aspect is happening at all times during a fight. And much of it is based on that deception. So I hope that this began the conversation in a way. I haven't thought about this as specifically, and it's really excited me to think about this now. I'm going to flesh it out in a more logical way where we can talk about algorithms themselves and the multi-layers of deception, and I'm going to try to do that for next time. But this is where fighting gets into some sick shit, you know, where you start to look in the back of the machine. Take the back off of the television and look where the wires work, you know, how they work. Take the thing off your computer and look how it's, you know, look how it's laid out. That's what's happening in a fight. That's the difference between, you know, Stephen Thompson now and Stephen Thompson at 9 years old. He didn't just learn to kick better and punch faster and move his feet better. His brain evolved. His brain rewired itself and it started to understand things. And at that level, the deception that's going on between the two fighters is something fucking supernatural. So I really appreciate this question a lot. I appreciate how much it's got me to think about this. And I appreciate that I'm hoping this is something we get into. We break down the big picture of what we're talking about here with sorting algorithms, deception, the layering of the game theory of what's happening between two people. And then we circle back to this in deeper detail. And that way of thinking is kind of often how – and I, when I talked to Greg Jackson about Cub and Cowboy and stuff in Toronto, he said something that really kind of – I noticed because it made sense to how I study this stuff and about how fighting is very big and very small and very big and very small. And this warfare is based on deception. That's very small. And then we get into it and it becomes very big. And then because we're talking it out, oh, my God, there's so many things happening. And there's these psychological layers to what's happening. And so then the way that we'll work that out is we'll break it up into small pieces. We'll break that big thing up into little pieces and we'll study those. The sorting algorithm, what does it mean? We'll get down to the deep layer. I'll break it down in – bubble sort is actually a fairly simple thing to break down. It's not the way that fighters sort, but it makes you understand the sorting algorithm that takes place. So we'll break that down next week. Then we'll find somebody. We'll have a question connected to that. We'll break that down. And then we'll apply that to what we know, and we'll apply we'll study a little bit about poker hands and how people bluff and lie to each other in poker. Now we'll apply those – we'll combine those two ideas. And then we will go into that and we'll look at, you know, other – we'll bring The Art of War a little further into that. And we'll break this thing down into smaller pieces, then which will all be small. And then when we apply it back together, it'll be big until we layer it in deep and then it'll become – something we understand. That's how we're going to learn about it. I really appreciate that question. This has given me something really – opened up a line of thinking that I haven't been playing around as much with lately, and now it's going to be in my head all week. So At Dime Collectors C. Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it. Chase, what's that, like 20 minutes on the first question? All right. Well, that's how we do here. So, and it's fun. And I hope that you enjoy. I mean, I'm getting notes from people that they get very high and then just listen to me talk. I don't know if that's a compliment. I think it is. But thank you. And I hope that that engaged you a little bit. So question number two. Micah Yonk, thoughts on the awful idea of the three-man booth last night? Anik is painfully boring, and who wants to hear DC over Rogan? All right. Okay. So TV is an interesting thing. Fighting and how it is communicated. So fighting itself is a thing. It's a beautiful, wonderful, amazing, curious thing. And the way we communicate fighting is really important. Language, talking, ideas, how ideas are shared, commentary, analysis. If we're going to have bigger ideas about fighting, we need to engage discussion. Some of that discussion is with your friends, and some of it is just when you're watching it, you're thinking yourself. And some of it is in a podcast form, and some of it is in the commentary. So this is very important. If we give a shit about the progression of fighting and understanding of fighting and the study of martial arts and all those things, this is a very important question. First thing I'm going to disagree with right off the top is any talk of Anik not being good. I will tell you, I am a broadcaster. This is my job. I have been for a long time. I am considered to be not bad at it by many in the field. And I have commentated 450 shows. I've commentated probably more shows than Joe has. Now, the ones that he has commentated are the biggest and the best shows in the world. I have commentated some weird show in fucking Lethbridge, Alberta, run by Lee Mean, the father. I've actually never commentated Lee's show, weirdly. I was just randomly drawing the fringiest show that I could think of, and Lee's come to mind because Lee's a psychopath. Jordan Meehan's dad. We may have commentated. I mean, I've fucking commentated everything on earth, every fucking show on earth, and I love it. It's the greatest thing in the world. And what you discover, where was I going? I meandered all over it. John Anik is one of the greatest broadcasters in all of fighting. I will tell you that with honesty. So we were watching it at my house last night. And something comes up. We're in Brooklyn. The Brooklyn Bridge comes up. And as it rolls out, he effortlessly says something about how many years it took to build or how many people built it or some detail. Why does John Anik know that detail? John Anik knows that detail because going into that show, like a week ago, he asked for every fucking shot that's going to come up on the television. Every open, every connection, every fucking little detail that you can possibly imagine. How are we going to roll out to commercials? Because he's going to study that shit. Because he gives a fuck. Because he wants you to have the best experience you've ever had. He's going to study every person's name, every pronunciation, where they're from, you know, their mother's fucking maiden name. He is going to study it all. And you fucking, what's the word I'm looking for, Chase? When you don't appreciate somebody, you unappreciative? You unappreciative fucks. Don't even pick up on it. John Anik will do more study for you to have a great experience than anybody in television. More preparation, more research. He will fucking sleep properly and eat properly and rest properly and meditate and focus. He will fucking do shit that I don't even understand, because he wants that show to be perfect. He wants your experience to be incredible. He's doing shit you'll never understand. You'll never know about. He probably wouldn't even like me telling you, because he doesn't want you to know. He just wants you to know that you had a good show. And some of you guys don't appreciate. I'm sorry, Micah Yonk. I'm not making fun. I guess I'm. I was about to use a funny tone to my voice. I'm Micah Yonk. Listen, I know you're just responding. It's just the first thought out of your mind. You don't have any like or dislike for any person that you see on TV for 10 seconds as you go about your life and do the things that you do all day. It's just a tweet, and I understand that. a comment, a tweet, a thought is a moment in your life. As you move away and something else changes and the sunlight hits a different way or you speak to somebody or you take a piss or anything, your feelings and thoughts change from moment to moment. It's all one big dream. So I know you don't really, but you did call John Anik painfully boring. And John Anik is one of the great broadcasters in fighting. And I know because I've watched fucking fighting nonstop all day, every day for a decade. And what he's doing is brilliant. And so then we get on to – so sorry, I got sidetracked because John Anik, when you watch his process as somebody who is in television and somebody who commentates things, when you watch his process, it's very inspiring. When I go to – and I need to know what somebody's pronunciation is, I just pull up John Anik. I really do. I just go on Fight Pass and I look up the fight and if Anik is doing it and he says Durandami or Durandami – what's her name? Durandami? Durandami. I know that because I watched John Anik do that because I know 100% certainty that not only has he studied it, but he has a note there of exactly how to pronounce it. I know that. I've never sat next to him, but I just know it. So anyways, also John Anik had this sort of dismissive hate when he first came in. I don't know how much, what percentage, but that's standard because we own this shit, all of us. This is our thing, fighting. This is our shit. Our people made fun of us because we liked it. Our fringe friends are like, why do you watch that garbage? You know, if we were teenagers, our parents didn't want to – people didn't want us liking this, so it was ours. And then this guy came in. Who the fuck is this guy? He came in here and he started commentating it. And we're like, no way. We're not having that. But now years later, you can't dismiss. You can't deny this is a brilliant broadcaster. So that's just my thoughts on it. So who wants to hear DC over Rogan? So that's it. So obviously Joe is my guy, and I am happily indebted to Joe. Try not to slurp, but as soon as I think about it, I slurp a bit. And Joe's the best ever. When you grow up loving the UFC, Joe's voice and his wonder of like, holy shit, I can't believe that guy has a goat's vagina of a cut on his head or whatever. His wonder is part of what it, you do not understand. Well, there's no way we can measure it. What connection our love of fighting is to hearing Joe commentate it. Now that we've developed that love of fighting, if we hear, you know, Dan or Dominic commentate it, that love is now there. So if the day Joe no longer commentates fighting, you might still be like, well, I still really like it. And you will because it's fucking great. But you won't know what connection that Joe created in your love of fighting. So that's forever. We owe Joe that forever. We owe Joe a lot of things around here, around these parts. So he's the best ever. And then you add a third guy. Now, Dan is great. He's talented. He's really good. Dan is a natural broadcaster. I went down and I watched him and Dominic work at Fox for a couple of days. And I talked to their bosses and stuff. And they all was just like, fuck. Guys like Dan, just the broadcasting is a job, which I guess I was getting at with Anik. I know we all kind of think if you had the chance to say it, to do a five-hour broadcast, that you'd kill it, but you wouldn't. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. The mindset, the being in the moment. But once you make it easy, after you train and you work at it long enough. Dan is a natural broadcaster. But a natural broadcaster, if we fast forward 100 shows, Dan will look back to now and go, man, I was terrible then. He will. He's not terrible, but he will. Dan 2019 or 2020 will listen back to his work and he will realize he wasn't good compared to what he is then. He is very good. But Dominic's only probably commentated 4 Shooto Brazils and 3 UFCs ever. And maybe he had some other practice, let's say 10. Cormier's the same thing. It's mind-blowing how good they are. Mind-blowing. Because in the 400 shows of commentary, I have worked with lots of different people, and I've heard another 1,000 shows commentated by people other than the great Joe Rogan and people like Anik. And there's a lot of garbage. And people, they literally just – and I've seen promoters. This is fucking amazing. They'll sit, I want to commentate something. And I'm like, okay, fuck, okay. So the guy will sit down, and then the broadcaster will get to the – and we're here with a third man, so-and-so. Justin, what do you think, or whatever his name is, what do you think of, well, styles make fights, and, you have grappler and knockout power in both hands, and they just say the seven or eight things, and they're like, holy fuck, now what do I say? Now what do I do? Like, I've seen it dozens of times. Cormier is very good, especially considering 10, but every single thing that he's going to a bit of space he's going to take is space that John or Joe will not be speaking. So in that space, would it be better to have John and Joe? I suspect it would. Although the vibe of hearing a third voice is in and of itself interesting. Also, Cormier, his take on wrestling positions and in-between positions is better than almost anybody. But he still sounds like a guy who is, going in and doing the commentary thing. So that's something that will change over time. He's better when he's the second guy, and Joe's better when he's the second guy. I think it's better with two. But just having a third idea and a third thought has its own value too. So who knows? So recap. Anik awesome. Joe's the best ever. Dan Cormier is a great commentator, and he, especially considering he's done so few jobs, but I think he's better as his own color guy than a third guy. But on the other hand, I've never made it, or at least recently I haven't made it a secret that I want to commentate the UFC. I believe I have the skills to do it. And I have the experience, and nobody loves fucking fighting more than me. And the only person that'll outwork me is John Anik. If they do three guys, always, my likelihood of commentating just went up 30%. So maybe let's just pretend it's all awesome and go with it. Because according to this thinking, you would have a great broadcaster, and then a broadcaster with fight knowledge, like Joe, and then a fighter. Well, outside of me, I don't know a lot of broadcasters with like fight knowledge that are not play-by-play guys. The color commentary gig has become a fighter's job. But if there's three of them and it's a broadcaster, fighter, I'm ready. I'm good to go. Dana, fucking put me in, dude. Okay. One day I'm going to do that. I promise you. I assure you. I'm as certain as I am of anything, unless I die young, I am going to commentate a UFC show. Many. Okay. Third question. So anytime a question starts with this, I'm interested. Actually, I'm not. Don't put this in. I like it this time, but don't. Real question, comma, not a joke. Should breast weight count in women's MMA? Considering genetics determines weight and it varies. You mean like if Misha has like 4 pound boobs, but her opponent has like, 1 pound boobs, we shouldn't, like, somehow the weight division should be different? So do we have fun with this question, or do we look at it seriously? Boobs are cool. Like, boobs are cool. I was going to say everybody agrees, but not everyone agrees. If you are attracted to men there's a lot of reasons that you might not think boobs are cool, but boobs are really cool. Yes, genetics determine your boob weight, and it does vary. But genetics also determine your bones weight, which varies. It determines the weight of your skull, which varies. It determines how big your hands and your feet are, which vary. It determines, should we go into dick size? Should we? Because, Shaq, no. Everything varies. And boob size included. And the weight of your eyeballs and the weight of your nut sack and whatever. So I think we just got to go with it. Sometimes if also... Again, now suddenly my brain snaps back into, well, there's some actual real shit to discuss here. When you cut weight, you are cutting fluid. And when you cut fluid, there's a lot of fluid into the fatty tissue and which is what your breasts are made of. Boobs are made of. So you will cut more weight from your boobs. So you will also cut more weight from your boobs. Chase, what do you think? See? Boobs. I think we just got to go with it. It's true boobs. It's my podcast. I can do what I like. That's pretty neat. We're going to move on. So boob weight, it is what it is. If you have smaller boobs, well, you have a small advantage there because you can have a slightly larger back muscle or whatever. So good for you. Good. See, I was just about to say good for you, and then I was going to say something about preference of boob size, like as a, you know, for mates, men or women. And the truth is that's all individual. Some people like big boobs and some people like small boobs. So just like that is individual for the mates and the interest of other people, it will be individual for weight cutting, and it may be an advantage, but you can cut more weight. So boobs. Is it possible for a 27-year-old to start from scratch and become proficient enough to compete with today's prospects? B-Dog Sweeney. 27-year-old to start from scratch and become proficient enough to compete with today's prospects. No, it is not. Let's ask that question of anything in the world. Is it possible for a 27-year-old to start from scratch and become proficient enough to play in the NFL? Chase? No. Is it possible for a 27-year-old to start from scratch and become proficient enough to be a prima ballerina? Chase? He doesn't think so. Is it possible for a 27-year-old to start from scratch and become proficient enough to play in a punk rock band? Sure, you could do that. What's the difference? One is about art and expression, and the other is about art and expression and extreme skill, talent, understanding, mind, sensitivity, experience, all of those things. And a 27-year-old can walk into a mixed martial arts gym, a fit, and let's say you're not even fit. He can work his fucking ass off for, you know, 3 or 4 years, and he could go 4-0 as a pro MMA at 30. He can go 3-4-0 as a pro MMA fighter fighting in Edmonton or Michigan or Winnipeg or Toronto or whatever. You can absolutely do that. Because what you're doing is you're facing other people of a lower level. You're facing other people where some of your attributes, your work ethic, your mind, other things that have become a part of who you are in your growth as a human being will come into play. You're tougher. You're smarter. You're more driven. You work harder. You learn faster. All of those things will matter. And then, so you will move out from, 5,000 fighters, and immediately after you win, you'll move down to that top, let's say 10,000. You can move down to that top 3,000. But now all of those people are like that. And some of them have 15 years more experience than you. They understand things you don't understand. Their bodies can do things you can't do. Their minds are capable of these complex, executing complex ideas in real time that you don't even know about. And they have all the things you have. And so maybe you can beat a few of them because those attributes of you, something about you, that who you – how visceral you strive for something. You have some ability to never give up no matter how challenging it gets that you develop through something unrelated to fighting. There's aspects and attributes and things about you and you work harder and you learn things. You might get to that top 1,000. And then they're all like that. Except they also are way better than you, and they know way more than you. And it's the competition that makes that impossible. Could a 27-year-old start from scratch and become proficient enough to knock out Anderson Silva? No. But could he knock out Anderson Silva in some weird, perfect scenario in which, the randomness of fighting happens and an error meets a great moment? Your great moment and his error meet? Sure, that could happen. But could you compete with today's prospects? You could not. You could not. Your body isn't capable of doing the things that theirs are. Your mind doesn't understand these things. The way you view movement and time and stress, and it's just you can't do it. And The reason you could do it 10 years ago is because the sport was just so poorly developed. It was so – and that's normal. Baseball was – and I poorly – I think that's probably a judgment, an unnecessary judgment. It was just lowly developed, early in its development. So was baseball at one time. There were people at one time – you don't have to look very far. There's movies about guys – walk-on baseball players. Guys who just fucking played baseball. They were really good and then just went to an open tryout. So that happened in every sport. But as the sport, there are complexities that happen. As in football, if you can't – I was going to hold this up. Like, I better get rid of that. So if you can't understand, you know, what this is, like whatever the language the guy is, you know, you can't fucking play football. You don't know what he's talking about. So you go onto the line and you're like, stand there, I guess I got to stop this guy. And then he's gone. Like you just don't get it. Like it's too complicated. And fighting is way too complicated now. It wasn't when I fought. An old guy wanted to train hard. If he had a good work ethic and he was really driven, maybe you could beat some other old guys or young guys that didn't work that hard or trained at a place that didn't really know all that stuff. And still, I lost way more than I won. I was just a regular guy, wanted to do it. Even that now, if I were to take what I was learning then and try to fight anybody now, it would be very difficult. I have conversations about still fighting, and it would very specifically have to be somebody who doesn't know a lot about fighting. They'd be younger and fitter and tougher than me, but I would be smarter or know more, and hopefully I'd have a chance. But for the long and the short of it is, everything once upon a time was so lowly developed that you could just go out and do it. And that, you know, there'd be the fit or the strong or the smart or the driven and they could do it. It can't be done now. Why on earth would it take Derek Brunson, a super athlete, seven years to develop to this level, but you could somehow do it in 1 year or 2 years or part-time? Super athletic guy with the highest level of training. We can study how the body and the skills adapt now. We know how long that takes. So if you start now, in 6 years, guys who are 10 years ahead of you are doing something you can't understand. So anyways, no. And it will not happen ever, probably again. If there is somebody with such extreme talent that somehow they can win a fight or two, that can happen. But you can't become great in something that takes 10 years in 2 years. You can't even become great at it if it takes 10 years if somebody's been doing it for 17. It's just too difficult. Okay, we'll move on. The Akasombo. What are some techniques that you wish you would find more use in the octagon? That's cool. The wish is interesting. I don't really wish anything would. I just want to see where it unfolds. I want to see what happens. And if something is there currently, would I wish it would seem more? Not really. I want to – there are things that are there. There are openings that are there right now. And if I see them and I see some of them, I know that Mike Brown at ATT is seeing them and I know that Dwayne is seeing them and I know that Greg is seeing them. And so the game will start to take shape. You can start to anticipate some things that you'll see. When a guy is knocked down and he goes to stand up and he posts up on that arm, people are going to start attacking that arm. People are going to start attacking the limbs more. That's there. It's there. You can see it. I watch and I see openings to attack those limbs because the more that you study fighting, it slows down a little bit and you get a wider view of the things that are happening. People are posting up on things or people are leaning on one thing. People are going to attack more. Even the kicks that you saw against Dustin, low down on the leg, Ben Henderson started doing that more. Other guys did it, but Ben started really using it as a big tool. That's a version of that. That's limb destruction. It's a version of it. When guys go to kick the body, hard kicks to the body, and I double block it, they're doing that because they know. I don't know why when we watch a fight, we see somebody get kicked in the leg, and we know that fucking hurts. We've learned that over time. Some of us have been kicked in the leg. We know it hurts that way. Others of us have watched it long enough that we've seen a guy get kicked, and you see his reaction to it. We understand that hurts him. You see a guy get hit in the body, and he can't breathe. We understand without doubt that that hurts him. We see guys get kicked in the head. They get knocked out or they get wobbled. We know that hurts him. But for some reason, we see a kick and we see this, and it's like a video game. It's just, oh, thank God he blocked it, so he's okay. If it's going to smash my head, if it's going to hurt my body, if it's going to hurt my leg, you best believe it fucking hurts my arm. Bad. And so when somebody kicks the body and somebody blocks it, whether it's a double block or a single – any kind of block, that's a – people are using it as limb destruction. So limb destruction is a big one. Bruce Lee, the great Bruce Lee, I have him tattooed on my body. He's, you know, the first great studier, deep studier of the martial arts. There were many at public one, I'm sorry. There were hundreds of – that came before, but one that shared the knowledge publicly so that we could all learn from the martial arts was Bruce. His study and his ideas and the things he put out were, of course, brilliant, and they're reproved constantly. And some of my work is literally I'll work really hard on something. I'll study it. I'll look at it. I'll try to flush it out. I'll try to explain it so that people will see it and they might like it or find it interesting. And then at the end of a long you know, an idea that you have, you come back to, and then all you'll just go look up something, and he did it, like, in the 70s. And all you did was reprove some concept that Bruce Lee had. But Bruce Lee talked a lot about limb destruction. So, again, we're going to use the example of somebody, Rick Glenn, actually, who fought last night. And I thought he did win the last two rounds, incidentally. He likes to throw those kicks to the body. Duke, he trained under Duke, especially from Southpaw. I'm this way and he's that way. And as that open side kick to the body, Southpaw versus Orthodox is always there. My leg goes into your open body. Your back leg, power leg, goes into my open body. If I start checking that, that hurts bad. Also, what if now I can't punch you as well? So we get multiple benefits from it. So limb destruction gives you multiple benefits. I'm in pain. My body has been shocked. I am hurt, and my weapon is now damaged or it's compromised in some way. Also, am I going to be hesitant to take more of those? Is that going to make me not engaged? Many benefits. So limb destruction is a big one. When Chris broke Anderson Silva's leg, Ray Longo and he worked on that specifically with the intent of hurting Anderson for throwing kicks. Because when they look back at the first fight, Chris was near perfect, but he got leg kicked a lot and it hurt him. He was damaged. I believe it was halfway through the second round when the fight ended, but he was damaged. And they were like, okay, well, we got to fight him again. What do? We like everything that worked, but he damaged us badly. And if we don't finish him, what's it going to look like in round four? We better discourage him from kicking. How do we do that? We do that by hurting him. That when he throws at something with the intent of hurting us, we hurt him for doing that. And so there was a point on the shin and in the direction of the shin that you damage his leg. The goal was to hurt him, and it was accomplished. Now, you can't plan that it will be a fight-finishing injury, a fight-finishing damage, fight-finishing blow, but it was. But it was very intentional. Limb destruction is one we're going to see a lot of. There's also moments, whether we choose limb or we choose other, there are moments in the constant when somebody has our back to a certain degree or even has us in a damaging position, we purposefully give our back, you hear my feet, so that your feet can go onto the ground and you can drive up. Because when your feet are on the ground, your entire body becomes the tool, right? So 2 feet on the ground, the ground is solid. As I drive up, it's really hard for you to keep me down. So I give up my back partially with the intent to drive back up and rotate around to my arm or dig underneath or get across the face and then disengage. And in that process, me, the guy trying to hold you down, just currently kind of accepts that, oh, fuck, this is – okay, well, I'm going to disengage and we'll get back. In that process, there's some shit I can do to you that is not being currently done. And I know Mike Brown is somebody who's working on that position. I know there are others. I know Henry Hooft and his guys are making strategies in that thing. Because if we know that we can predict – again, all warfare is based on deception. If something starts to happen that we know is going to happen, we need to do something about that. Fighting is not about accepting that. Fighting is not about, ah, shit. Now he's began the process of feet on the ground, drive straight off the ground, get back to face-to-face and disengage, and I just have to agree. I'll fight it, but I know it's going to make me tired, so I just have to agree. You don't have to agree. There's things to do there. There are moments in there, and that whole game is going to unfold where some guys in that process throw a head kick. That's the beginning of that. There's a whole world in that. And fighting does not just accept that something happens. Ah, shit, we're here. Okay, well, this means now that you've begun this process that I just go along for the ride, and the next moment I accept is that we're out in the open space and we're fighting again. I'll just fast forward to that and we'll do – no fucking way. There's a game in there. There's a world in there. And so guys are going to do that too. So there's a few. There's a lot. And wherever that goes, as we sit there and we study it and we watch it and we're compelled by it, we're going to find these other openings, or we're going to find things where – and this is happening. This is not some fucking sitting at this desk thing. This is happening everywhere. This is what they're doing. This is what, you know, Matt Hume is doing every day. He's looking and he's peeling back another layer. And sometimes there are things that we do. Oh, and here we got to make sure we do this. Why do we do that? Why don't we just do this? Because we're doing it because we agree. We're praying mantises. One praying mantis does something and the other one does. One really cool thing I heard Cormier say last night was if I throw a low kick – the high-level kickboxers he works with are like, never just answer that, because that goes back. If I can predict, I need you to throw a low kick. How do I do that? I'll low kick you and see if you'll kick me. Oh, you did. Boom. You know, you can't do that. That's the layer. Those are the layers we're getting to. There are things that we say are true just because we've heard them for a long time. If you look back, I did a Holly Holm versus Jermaine Durandamy breakdown. If you can look that up, I would appreciate it. I really love doing those, and I really, really love doing the work. In it, I was like, we say forever. Dan said it last night, and I'm not undermining – I don't have no intention to undermine Dan Cormier, but he was talking about outside foot position. That's bullshit. Bullshit. Oh, you know, we got to put our front foot out. You don't. You don't. If I know you're going to do that, then I know why you're doing that. And if I know why you're doing that, you have no advantage in doing that. You know, I'm going to put my left foot outside because it'll line up my right hand better. Then I know you're fucking throwing a right hand. And if I know you're throwing a right hand, you're not deceiving me. And if you're not deceiving me, you're doing something that you've heard said many times on my commentators. And so you think it's true. It's not fucking true. You don't have – your primary objective is not to get your front foot outside of southpaw versus orthodox. It's not. And if you think it is and I know it isn't, then fucking good for me. Because I know why you're doing this thing. And if I know why you're doing it, it's not real. You know? And that is – although Holly knew that, she knew that was the case, and she still couldn't win. But Alistair Overeem – that's a – I did two breakdowns with Alistair Overeem with this thing. One was before he fought Stipe, and I forget what the other one was. But Alistair Overeem fucking plops that right foot deep inside yours. And I don't know how we're looking here, Chase. And Alistair – oh, I got a box of stuff here. And Alistair Overeem dips his head way over here with his foot way inside. Why is Alistair Overeem – go watch Arlovsky, JDS. He was doing it against Stipe. Why is he doing that? Alistair Overeem is doing that because he wants you to either throw your right hand or your right kick – or what actually ends up happening in almost all these cases as he's over here is your brain is going, dude, that guy is totally baiting me to throw my right hand and my right kick. And then you don't fucking throw it. So what did he accomplish? Your left foot is out front of his which has just made your right hand and your right kick your devastating weapons. And now you will not throw them because you know I want you to throw them. Now you got shit. You literally have nothing. Alistair Overeem has his foot out here, and he's dipping his head way inside. And you don't throw those. The things that you lined up that are there because your foot is out because you know he wants you to throw them. Now you have two weapons, neither of which you'll throw, and you literally do nothing. And that's just because you think that thing is real. It's not fucking real. All of these things that are said to be real, and I know this is going to all of a sudden where the bottom falls out of things when you get this way, but you got to understand, most of it is bullshit. And I know we need structure, and I know we need outlines, and I know that we do need those, but most of it is not true. Most of it is just what we do. And so what does that mean? Well, do whatever you want. No, that doesn't work either. So we need some guidelines and we need some structure, and this is the best that we have. And since it's the best that we have, this is what we'll work with. But what we're looking to do is, as we become good enough and our understanding is broad enough and our athlete is good enough, is we get to the point that we start disproving these things that you, the opponent, believe. We start disproving them in fights. We start penalizing you for your beliefs. We start making you believe that this is how fighting has to happen. And when Eddie Alvarez and please understand that Eddie Alvarez is like one of the great fighters in the world. One of the great fighters in the world. When Eddie Alvarez gets beaten and with some of the great coaching minds ever, when he gets beaten by Connor, it's because Connor made all the things that they believe he showed which ones were not true. The truth is they're all not true, but you need some structure. We need some structure. We need to train a certain way. We have to have a strategy for now. But it's all based in whatever we believe for now. We know that we believed that the earth was flat, and we know that we believed that we revolved around the sun, and we know that we believed that having dirty hands didn't make your doctor make you sick or die. All of these things. And then we learn. So we study. We get science. We get new knowledge and new information, and much of it becomes untrue. And one day, 500 years into the future, every one of these fundamental let me try to make a little better sense of this. I'll use Greg Jackson's conversation again. There are principles, and then there are truths. So there are some truths. Being in balance does give you a certain benefit. When your feet are on the ground, you are stronger. To get back to your feet. It is harder to hold somebody down with their feet on the ground than it is to get up. There are some truths. So this whole, nothing is true, I didn't mean to put it that way. That is poor use of language. There are some truths. Gravity is real. If I throw you through the air, you will fall on the ground. There are truths. But most of the things that we consider true, many of them, are principles or beliefs. Beliefs. If we just jump forward 100 years and we say what will fighting look like in 100 years? Well, we don't know. But it'll be very, very different. Why will it be different? Why would it be different? Because we'll know more. What will be different? Many of the things we think are true, we will not do. We used to fight like this. Why did we fight? What was that about? Well, that was based on some beliefs. Do we think that, well, that's old and weird and, I mean, obviously wrong. We know everything now. We don't. Everything we know now, again, I'm sorry, I'm over-exaggerating the idea. Much of which we know now will also look like that. In whatever reason. And later, if we keep doing certain things, this may reappear. It very well could. Because you go a certain way, and then it needs to be beaten with a certain other way. But if we know that 100 years from now it will be very different, what does that mean? It means much of what we believe now will be untrue. Why would it be untrue? Because it's not true. And I know that this gets into a meandering philosophical path, and it's one that I'm deeply interested in. And I'm sorry if I go on about that a lot. And I'm sorry that I that I use improper use of language because I don't do the discussion great benefit when I say everything is not true. But much isn't. Much is not true. But it's true for now until Connor makes it not true. Everything that Johnny Hendrix did against Wonder Boy was true 5 years ago. And then Wonder Boy made it not true anymore. He went in and said, actually, it was never true. This to this doesn't really, it isn't a thing. It's just a thing because we admit it's a thing. As soon as we make it not a thing, and I know this is, again, I apologize for it being so philosophical, but this has to, if we are going to get to another layer, we have to go through this layer. We have to go through the layer of being skeptical of the things that we are taught and the things that are currently true or we currently believe to be true. We have to be. We have to be. If we say, you know, it's boxing, it's wrestling, it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and it's Muay Thai, and you just train those this way, and then you do this against the cage, and that's true forever, you're going to lose. And when you lose, you're going to look like – and I'm not picking on Johnny Hendrix, but you're going to look like Johnny Hendrix when Wonder Boy fought him. The whole thing will change. The whole thing will change, and what you believe to be true will no longer be true. But thanks for hanging in with me on that. I'm trying to get somewhere to another point with this thinking, and I know it has to go through this point to get there, ultimately. And I know that I get feedback from people that, you know, I meander all over about the philosophy, the big picture of these things, and I know that it might be better for my job. I know I might do a better short-term job if I didn't, but I believe that this is leading to a deeper level of understanding, and it might take a year, it might take five, but that we have to go through this period to get to that deeper layer. So thank you for hanging with me on it. Okay, this is interesting. It connects. I'm just apologizing for doing my study and learning the way that I'm doing it. I do that because I'm asking people to come with me, and it's a bit self-serving because I'm truly believing, and I believe it'll be valuable to anyone who cares about this conversation, which is not a lot of people, I understand, but if you are one of them, thank you, that we're going somewhere, that our understanding of fighting and the martial arts and its application to our life will be valuable if we go through this period of philosophizing about the big picture of how learning happens, how study happens and how we respond to things and re-examining things and opening our minds about things and trying to disprove things that we believe to be true. Maybe they won't be all of that. I believe that's – and so I'm apologizing for it because I know it's not easy. And I'm also admitting that perhaps I'm not doing the best short-term job possible because I'm doing this. And so that leads me – Gabe signed on, at Gabe signed on. The hate you receive is so unwarranted. Please don't let any of that shit stop you. That is very kind. Hate. If somebody hates or appears to hate your work, I think that's a good thing. I really do. I think that's a good thing. I think I truly believe that if I wanted to not have somebody say, oh, this guy sucks, fuck, I hate this guy. If I wanted to not have that, the easiest way to not have that would be to just do the same thing that you already see. You know, this is the knockout power in both hands. It's the striker versus grappler. You know, it's going to – and that would be the quickest route to just kind of fading into the background a little bit. But it would also stop this – progress that I'm seeking. Even having this conversation might result in some people going, fuck this guy, Jesus. The weird part about that is we all realize, we know undoubtedly that there are like 5,000 different things we could go find immediately. Thousands. Every song that's ever been written is on YouTube. Every television show that's ever been made. Everything. Literally every piece of entertainment, hundreds of millions, maybe more than that, of types of entertainment, what would they call content? I don't know why they call it. It is the content. It's just stuff. If you choose to watch my thing a third time, and then you're here now, and part of it is, oh, fuck, I hate this guy, then you don't really, unless you love the being unhappy, and that is a real thing. People watch the news, they get addicted to this feeling of unhappiness, fear, and uncertainty, which is why the news takes the shape that it does. But yeah, I think they call it, they don't even call it that in big businesses like the UFC. They call it engagement. So if you were to say, have 500 thumbs up and like 8 thumbs down, that is nowhere near as pleasing to the machine as if you have 500 thumbs up and 300 thumbs down. They prefer that. The machine prefers that because that means there is – they call it engagement. If you say Dana White sucks and then two other guys come in and go, oh, man, bro, Dana's the best, that's called engagement. So in the machine itself, this idea of somebody, you go, bro, you get a lot of hate, that's good. That's very good for my job. That is very good for Conor McGregor. That is very good for Ronda. But unfortunately, it's not good for Rhonda because it seems to affect her emotionally. If you understand that these things aren't real, nobody hates you, Rhonda. Oh, actually, yeah, no, probably they do. And when you think about that, that's sad. Think, just take a real true second and think for yourself. If you allowed the idea that there were thousands of people out there who hate you, they hate you. They hate what you're about. They hate the way that you do, the way you look. And think about it. That could get to you. Now, the truth is, so this, I've talked about this book before, and I highly recommend it. The Four Agreements. There is another one called The Fifth Agreement. It is amazing. It's fucking brilliant. You have to read. Chase, Alan, do you want to read this? Yeah, it's really good. So there are four it goes in detail about language, about the way people communicate. And that was my interest in it. My friend Tracy Trudeau turned me on to this book. But what I've been interested in is the limitations of language. If you're trying to figure out some deeper truths, eventually you get to the point that the way we communicate is in and of itself limited. And once you understand that, and it's true, and you do understand it on some level, but if you really think about it, right now, try to think about a concept for which we have no words. Anything. Think of any concept that you can for which there are no words. You can't do it. Why? Because as the human beings created symbols and sounds and then words. And if there's no word for a concept, you think in terms of the language that we created. So you can't think of a concept for which there are no words. That's fucking ridiculous. Think of that. Chase is currently like he's befuddled. But think of it. Try to think of a concept for which there are no words. Well, that shouldn't be right. The words are just a bunch. There's only 36 letters in our language. And in Chinese, they have different letters and different words. And so – and in the easy example for this is one we've all heard before. In the north, the Inuit – once upon a time, people called them Eskimo, but that was rude. It was a rude term from their language, which meant eater of raw meat. And they were like, we don't all eat raw meat. Why – like it was racist, right? So the Inuit was actually what they preferred to be called. And I'd rather call you what you'd prefer to be called. They have like 20 or 30 words for snow. So we call it snow. And then we might add other words. It's like frozen snow or wet snow or yellow snow, whatever. But they have all these different words for snow. So they can think in terms. They don't just go, oh, it's snowing outside. Their life is more deeply affected by if what of the 20 different types of snow. And they need to communicate that. So they have these different things. So anyways, so fucking killer book, really. And it's very short. It's shocking. I listen to it. I listen to books now. Like – you read this in a couple of hours, and it'll change your perspective of the world. So we start with language, and we talk about that. And most everything we do is just some agreement, you know. That's a tree. We know what it's a tree, and it's not really a tree. It's just what it is. The thing is the truth. But we call it a tree. In Chinese, they call it something different. In Korean and, you know, Portuguese, they call it something different. And then we call it an ugly tree or a beautiful tree. And then now we have an association of that. That's not true. The tree is the truth. Anyways, so you get into all of these concepts and then some agreements, the four agreements themselves. One of them is never take anything – be impeccable with your word. which is understanding how flawed language is and how flawed our interpretation of what we hear is and how that affects people and how powerful it is, how much you can affect somebody with the things that you say. I'll tell you a quick story. I was on the phone with a friend, and I have another friend. I'm going to name him Chase. It's not really his name. But my other friend said, I said, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm hanging out with Chase." And we're talking about having Chase's kids come in and do some kickboxing. Now, I fucking think Chase is amazing. I think this Chase is amazing too, but this other Chase, I love this guy. I just think he's a great guy. And he has like five children, and he's young. And the fact that he has five children is cool. It's beautiful. He loves his kids. He's, by all accounts, a great dad. But a typical off-the-cuff joke is about having five kids. So he said, "I'm going to bring his we're talking about bringing his kids in to do some kickboxing." And I literally thought in my head, I was just about to say, "Oh, what is that guy? I have like 30 kids?" Which I have no issue. I have no – the idea that he has children is beautiful, but it's a typical off-the-cuff joke that we said. And I'd been reading this book, and I literally said – I felt the choice in my brain between, "Oh, dude, what is he got, like 600 kids? Wow, put a condom on it, man." Like, you know, which is not real. It's not a real feeling I have about him. Instead, I literally said, "Oh, man, I love Chase." That's what I said. I felt the difference. And he goes, "Oh, you shouldn't say that out loud, man. He's on speakerphone right here." And I thought about it, and I realized the difference. If I'd have made a joke about him having 100 kids, which is not a real true feeling that I have. I have no – it's just a typical goofy thing that people say, that you say, that we all say. We've all watched people just say the thing. Guy comes in a white suit and you make a joke about a white suit. Like, it's just a typical – it's meaningless. If I'd have said that, think about what he could have felt and what he would have believed he knew about what I think of him, which is not true. I think he's fucking amazing. Instead, I said, "I love Chase." That's just what I said. And when I think about the difference between him hearing, "I love that guy," knowing that I didn't know he was there, or him hearing some joke that isn't real about – that I don't really believe about him, the difference of how he would feel about me and our relationship and what I think of him, and he would have an untruth there, that now instead he has the truth. And I think about that and I'm like, wow. And it makes you realize, be impeccable with your word. You understand the difference of what you can say and how it can hurt somebody. Don't take anything personally. This is a big one, what I'm going to come back to. Don't make assumptions and always do your best. We talked about always do your best before. Always do your best means always do your best in the moment, in the circumstances. Always do your best when you're sick. Always do your best, you know, when you're tired. Always do your best when you're angry. Always do your best when you're scared. The best that you can in the situation. You don't always have to do the best. Always do your best. But don't make assumptions and don't take anything personally. If we understand – so imagine that I had said that about Chase, not really Chase. Again, it's another friend. How he would have taken that personally. I've just not been impeccable with my word. He's taken that personally. Never make assumptions. He's made an assumption. All of that was not true. None of that was true. I don't really fucking have any issue. I think it's beautiful that the guy's a great dad. But he would have believed all of this stuff. And once I understand that, if somebody says this guy sucks or this guy doesn't know anything about breakdowns or like this guy's on coke or whatever, I know they don't really mean it. And if they do mean it at the time, it is through to something that has happened to them. Somebody else has made them feel scared or weak or insecure or like they can't accomplish shit. Nobody normal, nobody that's okay goes onto something and says Ronda Rousey's a cunt. Nobody does that. Nobody who's okay does that. If you do that, understand that you're not okay. Understand that you have been affected by the things – and read this book. Read this fucking book. But understand that things people have said to you, you've misunderstood. You've made assumptions. You've taken it personally. You haven't been impeccable with your word. All of these things. And you're not okay if you go onto things and you write about how much Ronda sucks. There's something missing or damaged in that could be better. There could be something about your life that could be improved, and it can be improved. Once you start thinking like that, it doesn't matter what somebody says about you. I don't care what somebody says about me. I don't really read it. And if on the rare occasions that I do, I understand it's not real. And people say that I'm terrible at my job. And people say, I don't know anything about fighting. And people say that my breakdowns suck. They say it. And I was showing this to Chase. And I'm going to show you this, not because I'm trying to toot my own horn, but I'm going to share an idea with you. This was the work that I did on the Holly Holm, Jermaine Duran, Demi breakdown. And I know I'm not saying, hey, look how fucking great I am. I'm not. I'm not doing it to, like, I'm doing it to show you an idea, okay? So there's a bunch of typing in here. That is script and stuff. Then it's handwritten. This is, like, different ideas that, you know, time code. You have to go in and find these time codes. Chase is doing something on this. Am I using this one, too?
You can't really see what's on
the Little strategy things, little notes that you do. Like little things, all of which is narrated and then typed. And little things during the process of this. You know, oh, I'm going to write this. Nah, that doesn't sound quite right. Little kind of little action ideas, concepts. You know, where the feet go, what's happening. All of this. This is real. This is what I'm doing. And I love it. And I do love it. And I'm not trying to brag, but I am proud of it. These are all little time codes that you go in and you find the little seconds. And it goes in layers. And what you have to do in what order to be able to do it. Because it's not like the breakdown itself that I'm proud of and I will be proud of forever is not like, you know, somebody gives me a bunch of tape and then I say some stupid shit. It's nothing. It's just I just have like 40 fights. It's just sitting there. Actually, it's not sitting there. First thing we have to do is go get them. And Chase will spend hours or Jeff will spend hours compiling them. And then I'll have 8 hours of fighting. There's no breakdown. There's no thing at the end. There's just 8 hours of fighting and a bunch of, you know, 50 different angles of replays and different. And somehow I got to take this 50 hours and find it down. So so you go and you do this, and I love it. And it does take days and days and days because you got to first bring the fights, and you got to watch them all. That's going to take you 7 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, 2 days, and you're going to like take them all and write down every little second of what you saw and what you could. There will be 14 options of that one low kick. Like which one is the right one? You want to do the best art you can possibly do. You could just pick one, but each one will feel like something just a little different. And it will feel different. It will look different. What you'll read out of it, what the audience will read out of it will be different. So, I've got 40 pages just of this. So we'll do that. And then we'll go in and we'll bring them all together. And now we've got, 45 minutes of edits. And we can only make this 4 minutes, and it has to flow. And then we'll go in, and I know that I want to put these logos and signs and words and whatever. So now James has to make that. I have to know where that's going to go and then get James to make it. He's going to spend 2 days putting those red circles around something or, putting some kind of, the name on the thing. You have to plan all of it. But anyways, my point of it isn't to pat myself on the back, although I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to pat yourself on the back sometimes. But bragging, ego, allowing it to make you think you're special, that you can't have that either. But my point of this is you can have a physical evidence for yourself. I'm sharing this with you because you're my friends, and you're my friends. I know that because we're an hour into a really fucking esoteric. I don't even know if that's the right word because I don't actually know what esoteric means. Do you, Chase? I don't either. I know, it's one of those ones where you use certain things, you got to know what it is. I think this is an esoteric breakdown, but I don't know because I've actually never really taken the time to consider that word. But this really weird, all over the place thing, if you are still watching this, you either like it or you're one of these people who likes to hate stuff, which is a type of liking. But so I'm sharing this with you because I want you to think about this idea. But whatever you do, there you can have a physical evidence for yourself about what you do. And so it was Mullins who told me this. So when I went to go meet with Dana and Craig Borsari at the UFC, I knew that was going to be a meeting that was going to have an impact on my life. Dedicated my life to this. This is what I do. This is what I love to do. I don't do it all day because I want someone to like me, or I don't do it all day because I want to make money. I do it because this is what I do. This is my purpose in the world. And when you're going to go in and you're going to meet with the people that will bring have an effect on how you're going to do your thing. I want to examine and study Conor McGregor up in real time, or Anderson Silva, or, you know, Ronda, the greats, the development. I want to study up close. I want to be able to take this obsessive desire to study the martial arts, and I want to take it as far as I can. Then I want to share it. I want to commentate the fucking UFC, and I'm going to do it one day. But this meeting will have a very big effect on that, the first one. And I saw Dana last week again, and Craig, and it's great because this is where I'm going with my life. And it might take me 5 years, it might take me 10, but it's irrelevant because this is what I do. But I knew that first meeting was going to be really important, and there are many other important moments that happen in your life if you have a path that you're after. And so you're going to question yourself, you know, what do I know, and am I good enough to be here? You're going to question all of those things, and it's fair. You should. You know that a part of you is constantly reminding yourself of beginner's mind. I'm a beginner. I'm a beginner. I'm new. I'm new. I have a childlike curiosity. In doing that, that's making you stronger, but it may also make you not aware. There are times you need to be aware of what you do and what you might have known. And so I took all of my notes and I looked at all of them before I went to meet with Dana and Craig. And I looked through these. And I looked through them all. And I looked at the things that I had made to, like, study fighters. I looked at rundowns of things that we had done. I looked at early scripts. And in doing so, I looked at lineups of fights. I looked at 150 breakdowns and all of the work. And I did so because then when I looked at it, it would be undeniable that I had done the work. This is real. This is real work. I did this. In doing it, I learned things. And in learning those things, they gave me new truths. When I had those new truths, I studied new things, and on and on and on. And I couldn't deny to myself that I had learned stuff because it's fucking right here. Can you see this, Chase? It's right here. And I can't keep that forever because that's hoarding. And I know that's hoarding. But it gives me evidence of the work that I've done. And then, now that box is running out of space, now this is the new one. And it goes in there. And I don't look at it often. But it's there. It's undeniable evidence that I've been studying for 10 years. And I look back and I'm like, oh, fuck. At one time, I didn't understand this thing. And now I do. And I understand it in a way that makes me curious about the next thing. And so why am I sharing that with you? I've never shared that with anybody. I'm doing it because I want you today, right now, right this minute, to find something and start writing something down. Anything. Anything. And I want you to put it by your bed, and I want you to write something down every single morning. Every single morning. Because first thing in the morning, what we do, we input. And we need to output. We go in, and we pick up our phone, and we go on email or Twitter, or we look at our texts, and that's just the absolute opposite of what we should be doing. We should be outputting. We've got to leave it by our bed. And the next thing, I want you to go buy a journal, and I want you to start journaling. Because if you do, journal about what you learned today, what you did today that was well, that was good, what you did today that you didn't quite love the way that it went, but what you could do to make that different in the future. If you do that and you do it every day, you will have a stack of things in a month and 6 months and in 5 years, and that stack of things will be evidence of everything that you've learned. And then you can't deny it. You can't deny it. I learned some shit. I'm smarter than I was. Oh, my God, 5 years ago I thought this. You look in there, you're like, man, I used to get mad at my wife when she said this, and I thought about it, and at the end of the day I wrote it down, and now I don't. Now, man, remember when I thought that? It's really valuable. It's really, really valuable. And so that just popped up today. The reason I brought that in is Chase, we were looking at my notes, and he was like, oh, it's cool, and you see this. And I'm like, well, I got all of this. And then he seemed interested, so I thought you might be interested. Please don't think I'm – what's that? He said it feels like it's heavier than 5 pounds. It's a lot of it, but it's I just shared that with you because I want you to do that. And really, it's like it's undeniable when you look back at what you've written down, the things that you learned, you know, and you just, what did I do today that was good? And what did I do today that I'd like to improve on? If you do that at the end of every day and you keep a little note in the morning, anything like what you dreamed about, an idea, what you might do today, and a big one for that book, for your journal or for the morning, what are you grateful for? What are you grateful for? We live in the most successful, healthiest, and safest society in the history of humanity, ever, ever in human history. The poorest and the weakest of us are better than the strongest and the richest of 500 years ago. And a lot of us are not happy, and it's because, again, this will help, but a lot of us are not happy, and that we got to change that because we fucking have so much to be grateful for. Fucking people get in a cage and fight for our entertainment and for their own thrill and entertainment and experience. They do it every fucking Saturday. That's my thing. It's probably your thing if you're here. Thanks for hanging in here. This, I think, has meandered all over the place, and I think that's going to continue. So I hope you don't mind. But it's probably your thing, too, if you're sitting here. But other people have other things, and all of those exist. You know, like what a – everything, you know. So anyways, so thank you, Gabe signed on. But don't worry. Haters will not have any effect on me negatively. And, in fact, they're very valuable for my job. They're very valuable for success in my business. If it's called engagement. And when people decide that they don't like me – so apparently there's like a whole world – so I used to go on Reddit. I don't bother now because it became a cesspool where almost every comment directed at me was something negative. So I'm like, I fucking can't hang out here. Who would hang out somewhere where every room that you go into, people are rude to you? But apparently – so there's a whole group of people who I've in my lifetime made something – let's say 570 tweets. And one of them in passing was some reference to Ariel Helwani being a taxi and I'm an Uber because – old style of journalism to me is old and dated, and I believe that. And Ariel's a friend, incidentally, and we make jokes about it whenever we see each other and give each other a hug. But to some people, that particular tweet, not the other 530 whatever, that one gives insight into who I am. Now, anyone who would actually think that or respond to that or now has that idea of me wasn't somebody interested in that fight analysis in this conversation. They weren't. They're interested in weird, like elastic, dramatic things. They're interested in the soap opera around fighting. So now they have an assigned role for me, and they would have had no interest or no connection or no role for me in any way. I would have just been some passenger meandering through the thing, but now I have an assigned role, so that's cool. Those guys didn't even know I exist or didn't have any idea of me. Now I'm the guy that actually is a scumbag because I made a thoughtless tweet about Ariel 3 years ago. So they had, you know, that. Not only does that not have a negative association for my job, it's very positive because now they can engage with other people. They would have had no engagement about me whatsoever. Now, because they are people who are very interested in that drama of things, and I didn't have any connection to that drama, now I have one. So now I have them engaging where they didn't even engage before. Now they can thumb something down or say I suck, that others can come in and say I don't. And that, just having that, Chael taught me about that, incidentally. Chael is the best at it. Chael is somebody, and he is, at that time was saying something like, oh, dude, this whole thing, like, way to inject yourself into it. I'm like, literally, dude, I just sent a tweet. Like, I wasn't even, it was fucking 8 o'clock in the morning, and someone asked me, I had no idea what, I just did that. It's like, no, it's great, bro, because like 300 people will all, I stand with you. Nobody will notice any of those. Chael will always choose the other. If 300 people think this way, Chael will choose the other. So he will be engaged because part of his job is for ESPN and for his other work is to have you engage with him. To, of all the thousands of things you could look at in the world right now, you're going to choose to hate Chael. That is valuable for ESPN, his employer. So Chael taught me about that. But don't worry. I will not be affected by that. And nobody should. If you are... this book, again, will help. This book has come in handy like a bunch of times today. But it's just such a good concept. It's from the Toltec philosophy, a Mexican philosophy, Toltec meaning warrior. which is also warrior of thought and truth kind of thing. And that's part of my idea of hashtag fighting is about fighting, that if you do hashtag, Chase will put it up. If you do hashtag that in something with me, I will always follow you, and you can message me and tell me about what you think about fighting. It's very valuable for me. That came from there too. So very great book. So Chase, we've got a few more. How are we doing for time?
An hour and 30 minutes.
Thanks for hanging here with me. And I drew boobies earlier. If you're listening to this on iTunes and you're wondering what I was talking about, I drew boobies. Thanks for listening on iTunes. I listen to stuff like on the treadmill and stuff, so it's neat if you are. What was your walkout song? Any special meaning behind it? And the second one, both from Akosombo, how much can rituals, like the music they come out to, help or hurt a fighter's performance? So we're going to answer that. There's a question on combat sambo fighters. I'm going to move that to next week. We're going to talk a lot about Khabib next week. Corner men in MMA should stop fights more often. We're going to talk about that next week too. Chris Weidman, we're going to talk about that. So I'm going to take this one, Chase, and then one more at the end, number 11 that you sent me, and we'll put the rest next week. Thanks for hanging in here with me, and thanks for sharing this. When people share this, they say nice things about it, and that is very thoughtful. Okay, how much can rituals like the music they come out to help or hurt a fighter's performance? Okay, so that's really interesting to me. Let me have a sip of this, and I'll try not to slurp. It wasn't a sip, it was a gulp, and I didn't slurp, but I did make loud gulping sounds, didn't I?
I was going to say it's a gulp.
Yeah. So first of all, rituals. This is very interesting because there's two aspects to this question that hit me. How much can rituals, like the music they come out to, help or hurt a fighter's performance? Now, there's two thoughts that I have on here, and they're very conflicting. The first one being, we don't want any rituals ever. We don't want any rituals because to rely on it, some kind of ritual, it can be interrupted. Guy comes back, oh, you're fighting right now. You're fighting right now. Oh, your fight was delayed. The mat is ripped. You're going to be going at the end of the night. There was one that Mullins and I talked about the other day. Google it if you don't know it already. Parachute boxing ring. A guy literally parachuted into the ring. If there's something that you're relying on or you're counting on being a certain way and you need it to be a certain way, there's a very good chance it will not go that way because of all the millions of variables of fighting. Oh, I got to put my left sock on before my right sock. Well, fuck, you forgot your socks at home. You know, if you can't rely on them, we don't want you relying on them. We want you to be always do your best. Coincidentally, in this book that we keep referencing today. Thank you, Tracy, my friend, for giving me that book. It really had a profound effect on my life. So rituals, before I say anything, another book that had a profound effect on my life, I'd like to thank a couple of our viewers, friends, for recommending. It's called The Art of Learning. I think his name is Josh Watkins. The Art of Learning. I do not have the book here because I'm listening to it. It is a fucking amazing book. The Art of Learning by Josh Watkins. It takes this guy who is a chess prodigy. I'm making quotations now if you're listening on iTunes. There's no such thing necessarily as a prodigy per se, and he became, you know, a champion with push hands, a type of kung fu, and many other things. And he didn't just become great at chess, he became great at learning, and he breaks down the experience of learning, and this book means a lot to me. I recommend it very highly. But thank you. Three or four different people recommended that book to me by Twitter and by messaging me, and I can't thank you enough. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. And Tracy, thank you for this one. Rituals, we don't want any of them. Ever. We don't want to rely on them because relying on them, they change. If I need to put my socks on one after the other and I don't have socks, what do? I'm fucked. I lose. I'm automatically knocked out. I'm not the champion. I've lost forever. My wife left me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we can't have that. So we can't have any rituals at all. We can't. We can't rely on them. On the other hand, anything can have value. So if we don't need a certain song, because we can't need a certain song. Because we come out, the thing is, I'll tell you, my wedding, where I married Erica, who is my best friend, and I miss you, sweetie. She's in she is currently in Vancouver and going to Edmonton. She is in the U.S. tour. She's in Canada for 2 weeks, but it's the U.S. tour of Kinky Boots. So she's away for 5 months. I will go visit her in San Diego after that MMA Awards thing. Thanks for voting for me if you did. I don't think there's any mathematical likelihood of me winning against those people, but thank you anyways. I got this killer outfit for it. I'll tell you about that next week. Really excited. So we got married, and we went and met this DJ. The DJ was a super cool guy. We went to his place. We were chatting with him. He's just a music obsessive, like, and we're like, he's got all the stuff we wanted. It was a lot of classic rock and stuff like that, and he had it all. And we're like, this guy's great. And he said, "What about your first dance song?" And I'm cool, whatever. Erica says she wanted, I forget actually what it's called, but Bryan Adams, "Have You Ever Really, Really, Really Ever Loved a Woman?" Is that? Chase has no idea. Anyways, Bryan Adams' song about loving a woman. So wedding's beautiful. It's awesome. Like, we're in Niagara Falls. The glass, you literally can see Niagara Falls, the falls in front of there. All our friends, best party ever. Talk to anyone who's there. People still come up to us and say, best party they've ever been to. Guy comes up to us, and he's fucking white. And we're, like, at our table at dinner in the middle of our thing, and he's like, "I really need to talk to you right now." And I'm like, nothing's going to fucking wreck the day for me. And I go over, and he says, he looks fucking scared. "This has never happened. I'm so sorry." And this is 5 years ago now, so this is different, you know, technology. He's like, "Your first song, the file is corrupt." Now you just pull it down, get a YouTube and put it over the thing. But 5 years ago, for whatever reason, it just wasn't available in that way at that time right there. And I said, "Man, you know, I think you got the right couple to have this happen to, because it's not going to wreck our day." And I went over to Erica and I said, I opened with that. I said, "You know, he's upset about something." I said, "I think it's the right people for this to happen to, because it's not going to wreck our day." And she said, "What?" And I told her. And she was like, "Okay, well, we'll pick a different song." And we did. And now we have two songs. So, you know, that the song that was accidentally our wedding song, and then the actual one. So we now have two. So it was good. But see, that can happen for your walkout. So if you need, you know, and there's some cool walkout songs. Rich Franklin would come out to "For Those About to Rock, We Salute You." That's one of my favorites. But I'll tell you, if you ask Rich, it's like, "Hey, what did that song mean to you?" It's like, "Well, I get into mindset this way. What if they didn't play it?" Well, fuck, I'd have to fight. You know what I mean? But having said that, what I will say is you can create a valuable attachment to the song. So my last fight was my best performance ever. By far, and I had won a couple of other times, and I'd lost but performed well, and then I'd lost and performed terribly. But as far as being in the state of mind to truly, I'd lost track of time, and it was this wonderful experience to be able to be so free, and that was not something very common. But I was understanding it a little more at that point, that was something that you could have some input into. And so anytime I felt great, I finished a great workout and I was getting on the treadmill, I would play the song. It was "Dream On" by Aerosmith, and I would play it. So I would play it in my headphones in moments of confidence, in great moments, in moments where something great happened, optimism, excitement. And I played it. I'm sure I played it 30, 40 times in the advance of that fight. So I built an association, a psychological and emotional state association to that song. And did that help? Maybe. I don't know. Did it not help? Maybe not. Was it irrelevant? Maybe. But if it could help them 1 or 2% and you're not reliant on it, why not? Build an association to it. Some of your favorite songs are your favorite songs because you heard them when you were getting laid for the first time, or like at a great party, or whatever. I mean, there's an you can build an association. You could probably build an association to a smell. You know, an orange. I started to always eat berries in the back. I'd keep some berries around. Who knows? Maybe there's attached to something. Maybe there's some value in it. It'd be great if it gives you a little value, but we're not reliant on it. We can't be reliant on it. You can never be reliant on it, because if it doesn't, isn't there, something changes. There's a surprise, you know, variables. What, we're screwed now? And there was a friend of mine that, before I understood what I, the limited amount I understand now, hoping to understand much more in 2 years and 5 years and 10, but I knew even less before meeting my friend Dr. David Klonsky and my friend Tracy Trudeau, who's also a psychologist, and David Mullins, who I do a podcast with, before meeting them and being exposed and getting ideas from them that allowed me to study my own things and so forth. I met somebody who told me about when he, with an athlete, he created something he called an athlete-specific performance schedule. In it, we wake up, we want to sleep like this, we want to wake up like this. We want our the people around us to speak about our opponent in this way. We don't want anyone to say he's a bum, that doesn't work for us. We want them to say he's a great opponent, but you're better. I want my coaches to train me this way. I'm at my best at the weigh-ins when I put my arms up. And outline all of the best ways that you can perform. And I thought that was a great idea. And now I realize that is absolutely the fucking worst idea you could possibly have. You've just outlined all of these needs that you have. You don't need any of those needs. We don't want any of them. We want no needs. We doesn't matter how. Because if we want our everyone around us to talk about our opponent a certain way, and we meet somebody at the store, hey, bro, you, here you got to fight. That guy's a bum. Oh, fuck. My performance schedule is off. You know? That's the worst idea you could have. That is... That is a over control scenario. All of these things are so beyond our control. Admit that, accept that, and be free of them. But at the time it made sense. It's like, wow, yeah, let's make it as perfect as possible so that his performance will be best. We want your performance best no matter what happens. We want you to be able to perform at your best if everybody said all the wrong things. At the weigh-ins, this didn't happen. You didn't go at this time. You didn't get this kind of warm-up because probably there's a very good chance you won't. So we've just outlined all of the reasons we lost because these didn't. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to do the opposite. We were reliant on nothing. We have no rituals. We always do our best because you got a broken hand. Some guys win with broken hands. Well, I could have put on here, I need two unbroken hands. No, I can get rid of that. We don't need any of that. We no rituals. I'm going to take one other question, and then those other ones we'll move to next week. Combat Sambo fighters, that's going to be a good one. There's some really fascinating things about that. And Khabib, Tony, that's the next breakdown. By the time I see you next week, we will have put 3 or 4 days into it. I've got a couple of weeks, so I'm going to use them. I'm going to really use them. If there's deeper layers, if there's more that we can make with it, if there's more ideas we can flush out, we're going to do it. But thank you for hanging in here with me, really. These have turned out to be one of my very favorite things, and not just because I get to sit here and listen to myself talk, although that would be a nice – that would be a good jab you could give me because it's funny and true. It's because I get to work out these ideas, and I feel free here to be wrong, to second-guess myself, to look at something, look for the answer, think you have the answer, discover that you don't have the answer. All of that is what I do to get to the point that I can do a 4 or 5 minute breakdown. But doing it with other people makes it different, and I really like it, and I really appreciate it a lot. Thank you. So a last question. What are your thoughts? I am Jake94. What are your thoughts on Dana White stating John Jones will fight for the belt upon his return? My thoughts are good because John Jones is the best fighter. You know? Now, I know that there might be other aspects to that, and I don't care about them in the context of wanting to see the best fighter fight. I also don't care about the belt, just so we're clear. I don't care about them. I don't care about the belt, and I don't care about the rankings, and I don't care about any of the title challenger. I don't care about any of those things. I don't have any interest in it. It's just not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the fight. I'm interested in the combat, the martial arts, the strategy and the execution and the moments of battle. And I do have friends that would be like, but dude, that's not fair. This guy did this. I don't care. I don't care. And it's like, oh, but, you know, Jacare deserves it. I don't care. I don't. I understand that justice and fairness and deserving and all those kinds of things, I understand that that it is okay to care about that. And I don't judge you if you like that. And in fact, I like that you like fighting. But I don't – this is all just one big, beautiful, evolving martial art, you know, art for me. I don't care about the rankings. I don't care about the belt at all. I don't. Who's the champion? It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't. You know, the pound for pound rankings, I don't care. I don't. I just care. Hashtag put it up, Chase. Fighting is about fighting. It is for me. It's for me. It's the combat itself, the people, the moments. Now, when I remove myself from that art, I will just want the purity of that art. When I take me and Brendan Schaub, I don't know, Brendan, you're probably not watching this 2 hours. You don't probably have 2 hours, though. You could have it on an iTunes or in the background of something. But my friend, I want to thank you for the conversation that we had. I really enjoyed it. You're a very cool dude and a very smart guy and you got an essence that is like a friend, a cool friend essence. I don't know how to put it. Does that sound gay? I didn't mean to sound gay. Not that there's anything wrong with being gay, obviously. But I didn't mean it to sound gay, so I hope it didn't sound gay. But me talking about it sounding gay sounds kind of gay. But I really enjoyed hanging out with you, man. And I'm looking forward to talking to you more. But he and I talked a little bit about that. And he is interested in the division and the rankings and the title shot. And he's a highly intelligent guy. And so I get it. I get that smart people can like and find all that stuff interesting. And we all look at things differently and categorizing something and making sense of it. Well, this guy is the next guy. And if he fights that guy, it'll mean this, but he's already beaten this guy. I understand that that is a interesting thing to a lot of people, and that lists themselves and order and, I mean, hierarchy, that matters. It has always mattered to humanity and to people and to – so I get that. I'm not judging. I'm certain – please understand that I'm not judging that. And sometimes if I watch smart people talk about it, I find interest in their desire to make sense of it. And I think that's pretty neat, but I don't care about it at all. And in my world, there would be – I don't need any belts or any titles or any of those things. I just need the combat to work itself out, and then the artists, I want them to be benefited. I want them to have good, healthy lives. I want them to have decent money to be able to do the things that they want to do. So I understand that matters for them, and so that matters to me in that way. I want Jorge Masvidal or Cub Swanson or Stipe or Holly or any of the fighters that I love their art. I want them to have good lives. They get good lives if they fight for these titles. So that, I get that. But I personally don't care at all. So John Jones happens to be kind of a troublemaker in other areas of his life. That matters to some people. This guy doesn't deserve it, whatever. Great. I want to see John Jones, the brilliant artist, fight Daniel Cormier, the brilliant artist. That's what I want to see. So I'm happy. I'm happy about this. Incidentally, John Jones, in two different times I saw him, I've met him actually 3 or 4 times, but the last two that I can remember, one I saw him, he shook my hand, and we sat down, and he smiled, and he's like, Robin, it's great to see you, man. I love your work. It's going to be great working with you again. What are we talking about? Oh, thanks, man. And he was genuine. And I like that guy. And then I saw him another day about 6 months later. And I heard he was out partying in Toronto. And it was the next morning. He was a bit late. And I was in the back room with all the media. And he walked in and he goes, nice hair, bro. And then just walked by. That to me is John Jones. Now, which guy is really John Jones? They're both John Jones. He's a guy. He's a person. He's a fucking human being. You know, human beings are flawed, and they have good moments, and they have bad, and they up and down. And fuck, he's a human being, young guy. you know? But as far as the martial artist, there's nobody I'd rather watch do that art than that guy. You know, very few anyways, very few. So I'm thrilled. I hope that's true. Chase, any last thoughts? This is what he did. I say it a lot, but I do really, I talked about making a journal and writing things you're grateful for. I'm going to go leave here and I'm going to write in my book how grateful I am for these Sundays that we have. I really am. I really am. Thanks a lot. So please get that book. Write down some shit. A journal would be a great thing, trust me. Get this book, The Four Agreements, and definitely get The Art of Learning. I'm listening to it, and I love the way it unfolds listening. Keep questions coming and any feedback or thoughts. If you message me and you put Fighting is About Fighting on Twitter, I will follow you back. And a lot of people gave me a lot of great stories about what martial arts meant to them, and it meant a lot to me. It helped me understand that there are a lot of us out there that are studying the martial arts and studying fighting for a lot of really neat reasons, and that it has a lot of great things in people's lives, and that means a lot to me. So thanks. Ask Robin Black, episode 4. I think we're trying to get together next Sunday again, so send us some questions, and we'll keep answering them. Black out.